This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome, new and regular listeners. This is Lana joining you for the next hour. I'm happy to have you. I like to talk about what we're not allowed to talk about. These are the things we should be scrutinizing with a microscope, the things the establishment tells us not to question. We know what these topics are. One of those is the myth that children of homosexual parents are no different from other children and suffer no harm from being raised by homosexual parents. My guest today will discuss this myth, and as you probably guessed, she's quite controversial. Why? Because she wrote a book called Out From Under, The Impact of Homosexual Parenting. In fact, Dawn Stefanowicz could be charged for a hate crime in Canada for writing this book. So it was published in America, which is still surprising. She's even received death threats for this book. Dawn is a kind, intelligent woman, and she doesn't spew hatred of any kind, and although she is a Catholic, she isn't preaching on whether gay is right or wrong. In the book, she shares her very personal story of being raised by a gay father and how it impacted her life. Sadly, she was exposed to different gay subcultures, explicit sexual practices, and other behavior no child should be exposed to, and it affected her for many years. But as it turns out, this is a story shared by many other children who grew up with same-sex parents. You see, in the entire subject of gay parenting and surrogacy, nowhere are people asking about the rights of the children. Is it good for the children? How are children being impacted? In fact, these days we're told gay parents are actually better parents than a man and a woman. Somehow nature didn't get it right. The conversation that no one wants to objectively discuss is, what kind of family is best for the children? If you ask this question, you are a bigot and a homophobe and must be silenced and iced out of society. But this question must be dissected and studied from every angle scientifically. I don't come from this from a religious perspective, and people that listen to me know my stance on homosexuality, but I come from this from a nature-based, biological perspective. Let's talk about why children who grow up with same-sex parents have more anxiety, depression, suicide, are more likely to be abused or have been molested, more apt to engage in unhealthier habits such as sleeping around, drugs, smoking. They suffer from more unemployment, less education, and need more public assistance. As possible future gay parents, it's not a time to be selfish and think only of yourself, but to think of the child you are bringing into the planet via surrogacy, a child that will not know his or her true mother or father. This is cruelty, because the harsh truth is, without science, this would not be happening naturally. The biological truth is that gay sex is recreational, not procreational. But the fact is, the effects of being raised with two daddies or two mommies is a subject that also involves biology, psychology, social, emotional, and legal ramifications. When will adults stop being selfish and ask, what is best for the children? We'll discuss this and much more with Dawn coming up. Hi, Dawn. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lana. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're a brave woman who I respect because taking this conversation public in our current political climate is not an easy task, but people need to realize you were the victim and yours is a story that is never heard, is it?
It isn't. You know, for any child to go public, it is extremely risky personally and professionally. You know, I'm a Canadian, but, you know, there are risks for me because of our laws here. But I'm worried about the United States and other countries when they legalize same-sex marriage or genderless marriage. It eliminates and restricts a number of our freedoms.
That's right. And I'd remind people as we get going in this, that this topic, it's bigger than people's religious doctrines or views on homosexuality. It's about what's good for the children and how it affects them mentally, physically, spiritually. We know the negative impact of children who grow up without dads and also without moms, but all of a sudden we forget that when it comes to homosexual parenting, right?
Well, it's true because, I mean, you know, people try to diminish the fact that man-woman marriage is traditional, but when we look at the impact on children long-term who've lived through cohabitation, divorce, single parenting, step-parenting, you know, especially after remarriage, foster care and adoption, and even children that have come through reproductive technologies and surrogacies. When you get to same-sex parenting You know, definitely kids are going to struggle with a number of issues coming out of any area of brokenness, but especially when you're denied the respect and the freedom to be able to share what you really, really feel inside.
That's right. And today all we hear about is human rights, but seldomly do we hear about children's rights or what's good for the children, not just what the selfish adults want. And we often hear that children grow up in just as well adjusted in homosexuals and heterosexual homes. So does your childhood experience in a homosexual home reflect that commonly accepted message?
You know, I don't follow the LGBT talking points. And so I would say that the impact for children is quite negative overall. I've heard from well over 50 adult children that grew up in a same-sex parented household, and they have experienced depression, all different types of stressors. About 30% of us self-identify as second generation, whether that's homosexual, bisexual, or even transsexual, transgender. There's a number of things we have to deal with long-term. And, you know, it takes us into about our late 20s, early 30s before we can begin to understand how this has impacted us.
Now, what was it that caused you to wake up to this impact that you've endured?
Part of it is, you know, I really didn't have the maturity as a child to, you know, really to comprehend what was going on, why from infancy my father had different male partners that were in the home. And I also, you know, was taken into the developing GLBT subcultures in Toronto, Canada. This would have been late 60s going into the early 70s, before there was that political correctness that you now see with the GLBT, LGBT movement. But, you know, our brains as human beings don't stop developing until about our mid-20s. And it's by then our frontal lobe of our brain can now, you know, actually judge what we feel about things, what we think about things, and start reasoning and assessing where we've come from, where we're at now, and where we're going. And unfortunately, you know, by my late 20s, when I was ready to begin to address my thoughts and my feelings around growing up in a homosexual household, I had already made a number of big decisions around relationships, my academic and career goals, and so forth.
Well, I think we should get into that. I wanted to ask about your mother and father. So what was your relationship like with them for people who don't know your story?
Well, my parents married in 1960. And on the outside, it looked like a traditional relationship. And my twin brother and I were about 10 months old when my father brought a male partner to live with us for about five and a half years. And so from that point on, you know, my whole infancy, I don't remember ever a time where my father didn't have at least one male partner in his life. And so people would have seen different males coming and going from the home. They also would have seen, you know, children, which would have been my two brothers and myself. Now, my younger brother was conceived a few years after, and my twin brother and I, you know, came on the scene. And at that point, my parents stopped all sexual relationships, and that meant that only homosexual sex was going on in my home from the time I was about 2.5 years of age.
So your mom still stuck with him, even though he came out as being gay.
Yes. And what people don't understand, when you grow up in a homosexual household, we will have different types of family structures. And so we may not be represented in a census if that is done, because they will usually, you know, ask, you know, the husband and wife or the, you know, the adults in the home and how many children and, you know, some general questions, but they don't necessarily go into who are your sexual partners, who are you currently having sex with. You know, and are these people living in your home?
Yeah.
That doesn't get represented in a lot of the census taking nor in the research.
Well, I know this is an intimate question, but what kind of sexual example were you exposed to in the home?
I saw a lot. There was nudity. I did see some sodomy. I saw and heard a fair bit of things that would relate to sexuality. There was pornography. There was a different types of innuendos that were made of a sexual nature in that environment. And when I also associated within the subcultures around my father and his partners, there was a fair bit of nudity there as well. There was also more than just hints of sadomasochism. There was also what I would consider to be pedophilia, in the sense that a number of the men around my father, including my father, were attracted to minors, you know, men that were just coming into adolescence, young, you know, basically boys just hitting about the 12, 13 year mark. And they seemed to have a special fascination for teen boys.
Yeah, you know, this has been coming out more and more. Actually, there's been some recent cases, but I was also reading on your site on how the public is unaware that there's actually a growing movement within psychiatry to actually normalize all forms of sexual practice, including sex with children, correct?
Yes. You know, if you look at it, it's in certain countries. If you look at Germany as an example, they're teaching that between 0 and age 4, children should be masturbated and learn about masturbation, and then from about age 4 onward, learn about sexuality and gender. And so there is a sexualization of children going on, and it's being pushed into, you know, different countries, different parts of the world. And it's not really about equality and love. It's more about, you know, taking children hostage in a way where they're emotionally and psychologically and mentally going to be obsessed and, you know, controlled by thoughts and feelings that they otherwise would not have experienced.
That's right. I know that in first grade now, they're even teaching some kids about, you know, graphic sexual positions and gay sex. And it's like, in first grade, I mean, who thinks about sex in first grade, you know?
Well, this is it. You know, the left are not concerned about morality or ethics. And, you know, in the situation I grew up in, there was a boundlessness around sexuality and gender identity. And that created a lot of confusion for me. I'm sure there was a lot of suffering and a lot of struggles that I had that I would not have had in a different kind of environment.
Now, do you remember what you were feeling and what was going on in your head when you were seeing some of these things around you?
Well, I was exposed to sexuality beginning in infancy. And so I was actually sexually abused beginning as an infant. And so was my twin brother. And so I had nightmares for about 7 years. And I had a major speech impediment as well for about 7 years, between the ages of 3 to almost 10. You can't tell that now, but, you know, after 6 years of speech therapy plus an additional 5.5 years because of a family member with a level of deafness, you know, when you have close to a dozen years of speech therapy, you know, it's very hard to now pick up some of the major struggles that I had as a young child growing up in this environment.
Well, did your atmosphere confuse you sexually growing up? Because I know many gay parents actually encourage, they want their children to be gay. And I had a friend who grew up with two moms and they were always encouraging him to be gay. So eventually he got a boyfriend, but he told me that he didn't even know if he really was gay. So did you ever come across any sort of confusion?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I remember by the time I'm 8, 9 years of age, my father's telling me that I can be whatever I want to be. And I can wear boys' clothes, men's cologne, my hair, you know, I can have it cut differently. He really was about exploring this idea of boundless gender. It wasn't really something where, Dawn, you're a girl, you're going to grow up and be a woman. There was a lot of confusion around gender roles. In fact, you know, I had thought that maybe it would have been better if I'd been born a boy than a girl, because at least I wouldn't have been feeling like a doormat and stepped on and diminished. See, I never felt that I was loved, valued, or seen as important in my kind of environment surrounded by gay men.
So did you try and seek out some kind of attention from men, almost looking for a father?
Yes, I did. I mean, at age three, I unconsciously turned away from my father, looking for some level of replacement. There was a real emptiness inside. You know, people can't understand it. They're thinking, well, you know, you had a gay father. So what are you worried about? What were you actually missing then? But his attentions were not on, treating me like I was something special. He was totally caught up with the men in his life. And that's where he spent his energies and his time. And so I didn't feel anyone, you know, anywhere close to him in the sense of being loved and valued. I know he did love me, deep down, but he didn't have the ability to affirm me because I didn't see him loving women.
Yeah.
I didn't see him loving my mother. And when we, as children, don't see our parent being loved, and being loved by the opposite gender, that is extremely confusing for children because it makes us, we actually absorb that kind of negativity in that environment. Being surrounded by just, you know, basically men, not normal heterosexual couples in my situation, had a profound negative influence on my sense of sexuality and gender identity.
And sadly, he passed away, correct, your father?
He did. In 1991, I was in my late 20s, and he passed away of AIDS. And, we realized that was a very strong possibility about 5 years before he died. And, you know, we had confirmation the night that he died, that he had died of AIDS. And a number of his partners also died of AIDS. And a few of them are mentioned on the AIDS Memorial in Cawthra Square in the gay village in Toronto, Canada.
Well, do you know other people who have lived with homosexual parents and how did their experiences differ from yours?
You know, it's interesting. The majority of us had a fair bit of instability in our family structure and in the adults that were coming and going from our home environment. I know, two adult children that grew up with, in a situation where there was some level of stability in that their mother was in one relationship with another woman for the length of time that those relationships existed. And so outside of that, I have not seen that level of stability. There's been a lot of multiple partnering going on. And when they looked at the research, they found that only 2 out of 15,000 adult children that had grown up with a parent that had had at least one same-sex relationship, so only 2 out of 15,000 grew up from, you know, basically in the first 18 years of their lives with their parent involved with one other same-sex partner. So the majority of us will have a fair bit of instability.
Yeah, that's very difficult for little kids. I just think of when I was young, thinking of my parents breaking up or divorcing. That was really heavy for me to think of at that time. So children are really fragile.
They are. You know, there's this lie out there about children that we're somehow, very adaptable and strong and that we can handle basically anything the world throws at us. And that isn't true. We have to do our best at coping with what we're living with. And then we have to assess it as we're ready to. And not everyone can. It can be too difficult for a lot of adults. And so that's what you find. I mean, the adult children that have contacted me often have difficulties with trust and intimacy and relationships. This is male and female. Girls that grew up with gay fathers tend to have a great deal of difficulty trusting men. I found with boys that have grown up with a gay father have often experienced molestation as children, whether it was their father or one or more of his male partners. And they've also struggled with, settling down with just one other person. And you have to imagine what it's like when you see your parent involved with different partners. Even if they're partnered for a time with one partner, it doesn't mean it's monogamous. There's a fair bit of, like in my father's situation, he shared even though he was partnered, he and his partner shared certain relationships, and they also went out and cruised individually by themselves.
Yeah, not all, of course, but generally the gay lifestyle, it is full of partying. There's lots of drugs, there's lots of sleeping around and other drama. But how do you respond to those who say, yeah, but yours is just one experience and there's many monogamous gay couples?
I haven't seen that level of monogamy that other, you know, people will put out there. You know, again, children, when they grow up in this environment, they share, you know, when they feel safe, they share the details of what it's actually like. And it doesn't seem to match the talking points that you'll hear from the other side. I mean, research bears it out. I mean, they looked at homosexual relationships, and they found that they couldn't find any partnered men over a 5-year period that were exclusively monogamous during that 5-year period of time. And I was reading a recent New York Times article, and it was about men who legally got married to their same-sex partner. And what they found is that in 50% of those relationships, these men opened up their relationships to other sexual partners within the first year.
Yeah, it's funny to me how generally there's been a lot of gays that look down on and mocked marriage and traditional family unit, but then here they are trying to have that and trying to copy that. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. In Canada, when we had same-sex marriage legalized, this was in July 2005, what's really interesting to us statistically is that over 95% of those that could potentially have gotten married, only like under 5% actually tied the knot. And we actually had more licenses being given to international couples than Canadian. And so it was actually used when it came into Canada and was legalized, same-sex marriage. It was used by international couples to take it back to their own states and countries to, you know, create court challenges to see if they could have their relationship recognized in their own state, in their own country.
Yeah, I always wonder, why is it so important for them to be recognized if marriage is ultimately about between two people? Why do they need the state involved so much? Have you thought about that?
I have. Now, I've testified in 9 U.S. states, in the Fifth Circuit and at SCOTUS, as well in 3 areas in Canada and also internationally in other countries, including Argentina and Australia and Paraguay. And what I found is that, you know, they will often bring up the argument about federal benefits, visitation rights when one partner is hospitalized or dying, mm-hmm. also inheritance rights. All of these things can be legally agreed to for, you know, whatever relationship someone has. So there are ways to go about that. I think it's more about having forced acceptance of various types of relationships. And the problem you have is in genderless relationships, that's really what it is. It's about creating a situation where the government, the nation recognizes, say, same-sex marriage, but it's really genderless because it could be a transsexual marrying. You know, whether it's another transsexual or transgendered person, it could be a situation where there are, say a man with two women and they consider themselves bisexual, and they could have the same kind of arranged marriage legally recognized by the government if they use the very same arguments of the LGBT movement.
Now, are you concerned with the legislative attempts to basically redefine marriage as an institution unrelated to children?
Well, you know, I don't believe you can separate marriage from procreation. Whether or not married couples as husband and wife can actually have children or not, or do have children or not, that isn't the question. Fact is that when you have children, they are connected naturally, biologically to their father and to their mother, and you cannot create children in a petri dish and then say to them, you don't have a mother or you don't have a father, but you have this parent or these legal parents. A child knows, you know, deep down, intuitively, that they have a biological father and a biological mother, and will often spend a good deal of their life looking for their own identity and their own security in their biology.
That's right.
With their parents.
Yeah, and if we get real about this, without IVF and surrogates, this wouldn't be happening naturally, which brings me to my next point. You, of course, knew your father and mother, but what about the kids who were born from an egg or sperm donor and who will never know who their true ancestors are? Have you heard from people who grew up this way?
Yes, I have. There's Anonymous Us. There are some other interesting blogs that are, managed by children that have grown up never knowing either their father or their mother. In most cases, it's a sperm donor father. And they do really, really struggle with who they are. And they feel like they're missing half their identity, and that they don't like the idea that the adults in their life made a decision to permanently deprive them of at least one of their biological parents. And so there's a great deal of psychological and emotional struggling that goes on. And the other challenge that they have is they potentially could be attracted to a half-sibling, someone who was conceived artificially using the same sperm donor.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, they found in certain communities where the sperm donor was used between 150 and 300 times.
Wow.
So potentially, I mean, you do have communities of, as an example, of lesbian women who conceive children using the same sperm donor, and the children actually play together as half siblings.
Wow. Well, what about, we've talked about two fathers, but what about the effects of growing up with two women?
You have to look at, first of all, the sex of the child, whether it's a boy or girl growing up with two women. And I don't want to limit it to two women, because there is a greater chance that that relationship will end and there'll be other relationships. For the daughter, I think she would, from my discussions with adult children that have grown up with lesbian parents, the girls tend to grow up with this idea that they can do all things themselves and that they don't need men. The reality is, when these adult children have grown up and married the opposite sex, they realize, oh my goodness, this is what I missed out on. And it's like, this is what a dad is supposed to do and be there for. And, I remember the testimony of Heather Barwick for the SCOTUS brief, and she realized what she was missing from watching her own husband and how he was involved with her children and just the raising of the children. And she went, oh my goodness, this is what I'm missing.
Yeah.
It's a very, very painful realization. And also the fact that you do come to the reality that as a girl growing up and you become a woman, that society might be telling you, and the lesbian community might be telling you, you can do anything you want, be anything you want, do it all, and that you don't need men. But it's a painful reality that you come to, and you go, you know what? We're not like men. We need men.
Yeah, that's right.
And for boys that grow up, it can also be very confusing for them because they miss out on the role model. And what we have is, in our situation, when our parents are partnered with the same sex, the partners tend to take on pseudo gender roles.
Yeah, they do.
And so we'll be told, okay, gender is not important. Gender roles are not important. You could be any sexuality you want, any sexual orientation you want, any gender you want. It's boundless. At the same time, mimicked right in front of me is my father with a male partner, and they all seem to have these traits, kind of more feminine traits, more submissive, and they tend to do cleaning and cooking and certain things you'd expect of, the mother in the home or the woman in the home.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And so it's a really weird thing when you start to see this pseudo gender substitution going on. And for a child growing up in this, you feel like, oh my goodness, like, why on earth wouldn't you just ask for the real thing? Like, get the real thing. If that's what you're you know, parents, same-sex partners going to be doing. Says, children, I see right through it. They see this idea of equality as being really inequality, because you don't have equality between the genders. You don't have male and female that are equal in front of you.
Yeah.
You don't see male and female being equally loved, equally valued, equally seen as important. And I apologize if I seem repetitive on this issue, but I'm restating it because it's a very, very deep, painful thing to have one gender rejected in the in your deepest relationships you could ever have, which is should be with your both with your father and your mother. You should be able to see father and mother as husband and wife, father and mother. You should also be able to see interactions with your brothers and sisters, with your parents, both genders being represented there. You need to see all of that. Those family relationships are very vital to your understanding of who you are and how you connect within your own family. And creating these fake families, because they really are fake families, when you have, a parent that is involved with different same-sex partners, those are not your real parents. Even if you call that same-sex parenting, I could have an auntie or grandma come over and do pretty well the same thing, except they're not going to be having sex with my parent, hopefully not anyway, in the bedroom. You never know these days with what people are asking for recognition of. But it's just, there's something incestual in this. For a child, though, because, you know, you grow up and you relate to that same-sex partner almost as if they're an older sibling. And at the same time, what looks or feels like an adopted older sibling in your family is actually having sex with your parent. It's really an odd way of looking. But I never looked at any of my father's partners as a parent. I looked at them, the only way I could really view them was as an older sibling.
Yeah, it's interesting how the left is just, they're just out to, they want to destroy the family unit. They have to destroy biological gender roles. They're pushing, you know, shows like Modern Family, The New Normal. There's just an all-out war on just the primordial family unit. It's something we've had for thousands of years on this planet. So what do you think their real motive is behind that? Are they just out to destroy things, or where is this coming from?
I don't think that the LGBT, movement overall, the membership that belongs actually know what's going on. But I think there's a fraction that use the LGBT movement that are really about dismantling the family and bringing in state control. Because if you look at a number of children that come out of this kind of brokenness. And when you grow up in a same-sex parented household, you truly start to lose your relations or your connections to your relatives and your ancestry within the first generation. My children are growing up without ever knowing grandparents. They're growing up without ever knowing what it's like to have that extended family related to them. And a big part of that's because my father put so much of his energies and his time, his whole life, into his same-sex relationships. He really, really put my brothers and I at a much greater risk of losing that intergenerational support that we would have when we got married and had our own kids. And so it just takes one generation to separate us from our biology, from our ancestry. Yeah. Our roots.
Yeah, and not a good thing.
We know what divorce does. We know it doesn't work for kids. We understand that even when a step parent comes into the home and is trying to do everything he or she can in the family unit, that still is not the biological parent. And so we need to be truthful. We need to be honest about the relationships that our parents are involved with. Because that impacts us as children going forward. And, you know, I believe that if as much as possible, children need to be raised by their biological father and mother who are married. as much as possible. And I do know there are foster care situations and adoption situations. But even with children that come out of foster care and adoption, you know, they're best to be raised by a, you know, by adoptive parents that are representative of married father and mother. I have looked at foster care and adoption and the risks for children. There's a much higher degree of there being, you know, psychological and emotional issues going forward, even though they grow up. You try to place children in the safest, most secure home environment. These children are in much higher risk of a whole bunch of issues. Children that come out of reproductive technologies as surrogacy and so forth, much higher risk of psychological issues, risk of cancer, physical and mental disabilities. And the children are also much higher risk when they grow up and want to have children to be infertile. So that, you know, we're really playing with nature and trying to be God in creating these artificial family structures and living arrangements that are not biologically tied together. And it's sad. It is very, very sad. And I know there's always going to be exceptionalities. I understand that. But to be actually out there saying all family structures are equal and will create good outcomes for children, no, that isn't true.
Have you looked into the many studies on the importance for children to have both their biological mother and father? Because I know there's even crucial hormonal interactions from having both parents.
There is. You know, when I've looked into it, to be fair, what I did is I looked at, first of all, I looked at one man, one woman marriage. Then I looked at cohabitation of, you know, biological parents. So the biological parents have not tied the knot. They're cohabiting. There's a much higher risk of violence, like physical violence and emotional violence in the home. Much higher risk in a cohabiting biological situation that the children will lose connection with at least one of their parents. And the children tend to have, you know, more sexual activity at earlier ages when their parents' relationship, you know, that they, when these children do not grow up, are not born into and raised in a married father-mother situation, it's just cohabiting, these kids don't do as well. You look at children of divorce, You see that, you know, I mean, Judith, I'm trying to remember her last name, but this person, Dr. Judith, she did research over 25 years. And what she found was, I think it's Wallerstein. She did research and she found these children were still dealing with the ramifications of divorce 25 years after their parents divorced.
Wow.
You know, you look at fatherlessness. So you look at what 85% of incarcerated men are fatherless. And we wonder why they got in trouble with the law and they dropped out of school and they had issues with alcoholism and drug addiction and so forth. You know, we look at single parenting and even the best intentions of parents. And there are kids that somehow make it through in all of these areas of brokenness. But and we look at single parenting and we know these kids don't fare as well economically. We know that they're at much higher risk of early sexual activity and so forth. And so you move on and you move into remarriage and step-parenting. The children often struggle with the new parent that's now is their step-parent. And it's challenging when you bring two broken families together under one roof. It isn't exactly the Brady Bunch. But anyway... you know, and then when you get to gay parenting and all the different ways that children like myself are come into these situations, we are obviously conceived heterosexually, but we have compounding issues because our parent can have opposite sex sexual relationships and same sex sexual relationships. And they can actually swing back and forth between heterosexual and homosexual relationships even throughout our childhoods and into adulthood. Now, my father remained in homosexual relationships throughout my early childhood into my teens, into my 20s, when, you know, before he died. I didn't see him involved with other women, but my understanding is that for many of us, we can have this, our parents flipping back and forth, that there isn't this stable sexual orientation that, that the left like to present. You know, there's like 8 definitions for lesbianism, and there's only 1 definition for lesbianism that actually is exclusively lesbian. When Lohmann and other researchers began looking at human sexuality in the mid-90s, the research there showed that, you know, the majority of men who say they're gay have had and will have opposite sex sexual relationships. They found the same thing with women. The women that said they were lesbian have had and will have, opposite sex sexual relationships. Mm. So it's really, really confusing for me, you know, growing up, because I didn't look at people, you know, under these titles of, you know, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, transgendered, you know, questioning, and so on. I didn't look at people under those labels because I saw this whole experimentation going on where people were not necessarily labeling themselves. That is later. That came after there was this political legal revolution to change family structures and to destabilize children from their biology. And that really has to do with selfish adult desires, not just sexual desires, but treating children like commodities and removing them from their ancestry and their roots and trading them back and forth based on the highest bidder and the most power that you have. And, you know, there's a number of people that cannot have children naturally, but if they're heterosexual, that's an issue for them. But anyone else, they're going to be infertile because biologically speaking, there's no chance that they could ever conceive. 2 women and 2 men can't conceive naturally. And children, you know, we're real human beings, and we begin to recognize that the image that we're made into doesn't reflect same sex. It reflects male and female, that we need both for our own identity, for our own development. We need the complementary genders interacting with each other in our growing up years for us to truly, truly value who we are as human beings. And I think that's what the LGBT movement has left out, is what children really need. You know, so they basically come out with the talking points. And if you as an adult child start speaking, as I have, about what it's like to grow up in this, they often will threaten us.
Yeah, I bet you've been really attacked because this is like the ultimate taboo. You can't talk about this at all. No one ever even questions it. That's out of the question to talk about it. So how have you been dealing with that?
Well, you know, you get hate mail, you get verbal threats, and you get written threats. And in most cases, you know, if this was being done to, you know, someone who says they're gay or lesbian, they would have the person who's making these threats and saying these vulgar, things against you, they would make sure those people were charged. But in my case, when I get all these email threats, bad emails and vulgar emails, I haven't gone and asked for any one of these people to be charged or investigated.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's just it. People keep saying equality, but now it's, they're the protected group, and people such as yourself have no protection legally. I mean, I'm hearing that, you know, people keep saying equality, but now discrimination against churches and pastors seems to be sanctioned. So if you deny same-sex marriage in your church, or if you share your religious views on homosexuality, you can actually be charged with a hate crime.
Yes.
I know Canada's pretty forward on that, aren't they?
They are. In fact, I've had pastors confess to me that they have received, whether they're phone calls or emails, of being, you know, basically saying that someone is sitting in another church, usually they're educated, and they say they're gay, and they're saying, you know, I really like being here, but if you say anything opposed to being gay or anything about the kinds of relationships I have, you know, I just want you to know I'm kind of putting you on notice. I'm going to be sitting in on the sermons and listening. And if you say anything I disagree with, I am going to make a complaint. And so pastors are being threatened and they are being silenced. And we have a fair bit of our denominations. And unfortunately, it doesn't matter whether one is Catholic, evangelical, Protestant, a fair bit have become very politically incorrect. And, you know, sorry, politically, you know, they're very, very careful in what they're saying. They're trying not to to say anything that would a person who says they're gay or lesbian would find offensive. And so, yes, we do. We have human rights commissions. In British Columbia, we have a human rights tribunal. And so every one of our territories and provinces are basically overseen by these human rights commissions. We have a federal human rights commission that over three decades had 100% conviction rate. And what you'll find is sexual orientation is a protected category. So if you are heterosexual, I just want you to know that you are not under that sexual orientation protected category. So you're unequally protected in law. The human rights commissions are not run by real lawyers, judges, and juries. They're basically kangaroo courts. However, they have the power to, human rights commissions have the right, well, the power really to enter your home, confiscate your laptop, computers, cell phones, and files, it, you know, looking for hate crime. And even at our border, where you have customs, there are materials that have been stopped at the border, books, DVDs, and the like. I know there was a sodomy documentary put out by a Russian film company, and that was confiscated at the Canadian border, being carried over by, you know, his name is Peter. He's with Americans for Truth. And he was shocked that they confiscated the sodomy DVD when that is available and accessible on YouTube in Canada.
Yeah, they're pretty full on up there right now. I was pretty shocked. I thought Canada was just, you know, peaceful and calm and respected everybody. But it seems it's just a one-way tolerance, huh?
It is a one-way tolerance. And, you know, the only way to get around it really is to take a stand. And yes, there's risks, but people understand this is not about hating anyone. This is about freedom of speech. It's something that in a true democracy, everyone should have. And, you know, I happen to have a Polish last name, which means that in our family, going back, there was communism. And under state control in communism, you have empty shelves. So you can't easily access all the food you would need or you'd like to have. And when the food's available, you stand in line blocks and blocks at a time and you wait until the bread, you can get your loaf of bread or your meat or whatever it is that has just come into the stores. As well, you know, people under communism had to be very careful what they said about their political leaders, and they had to be very careful they didn't put down their government leaders, their political party that was in power. They had to be careful what they wrote. They had to be careful because they could be fined and they could be imprisoned, and some, you know, were killed. And so if you remember what it's like to live under that kind of state control, that kind of regime that takes away your freedom of speech and also restricts your religious freedom to the point that, you know, you can only go to the state approved churches. You can't go to the underground churches, and you cannot freely worship, and you cannot, you know, publicly express your faith in your business or in any public places. So your worship, your religious freedom is restricted to a few hours on Sunday in a state-approved church. Well, coming out of that, you know, when people come into Canada, they're expecting that there'll be more freedom here, and they're absolutely shocked that all this kind of language and discussion is banned in Canada publicly. Whereas, you know, if you go back to different parts of Europe, people are very aware of what it was like to live under a state regime and how restricted speech was and religious freedom was restricted. And therefore, they express all sorts of feelings and thoughts around political and religious topics, you know, and so they can't imagine that any country through human rights commissions and hate crime legislation would want to ban speech and protect certain categories of people, you know, under a special label. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I wonder if eventually, because they keep redefining everything and the control just is just more and more against certain groups, soon they might even redefine who a parent is or might even come and try and take your children away because you're teaching them hate, right?
Well, this is it. In Canada, when same-sex marriage was legalized, the majority of Canadians did not have a clue that parenting was redefined immediately with same-sex marriage. And so what happened when Canada's gay marriage law, Bill C-38, was passed through and became legal, it included a provision to erase the term natural parent and replace it across the board with gender-neutral legal parent in federal law. So now all children only have legal parents as defined by the state. And by legally erasing biological parenthood, in this way, the state ignores the children's foremost right to know and be raised by their own biological parents.
Yeah, this is scary stuff. I always wonder, too, what the long-term effect would be. Like, let's say in the future, if they went far enough and it's like, oh, no, the state raises your kids. There's no such thing as a primordial family unit. What kind of humans would we become?
Well, this is it. You know, this in Canada, as parents, you can expect state interference when it comes to moral values, parenting, and education. And it doesn't just happen in school. We have some school policies, in place that, use a term called school climate. And what that means is that the child in school, is bound by the regulations of the school board within that school and beyond. So wherever that child travels as a student of the school, that child's school climate around him is like a bubble and it walks with him. It goes with him. So if he gets on the bus and he says something that the bus driver finds hateful or hurtful towards a particular group of people, that bus driver actually has to write that down and report it to the school principal within a day. The school needs to be aware. Policing of speech by students, by the teachers and the administration, and by the bus drivers and the school counselors and social workers and even the caretaker at the school. Well, you know, that policing of speech continues on with the child when that child leaves the school and goes to, you know, the corner store, variety store to pick up a snack or a pop. It also travels with a child on field trips. Also, if that child meets with other students at the local mall or goes to a movie theater, or a number of them or a few of them get together as friends after school at a child's home, the school climate is traveling with that child throughout the child's whole day, not just at the physical location of where the school exists. And so with that school climate, it means when the child comes home and opens up his or her laptop or starts using their cell phone or starts communicating on the social networks, that child's speech and anything the child writes, anything the child posts in photos or illustrations, all of that can be policed under the school climate, which means even the parents can be investigated if somehow the school finds out.
Unbelievable.
That the parents have said something that's in conflict with what the state is supporting.
Wow. Wow. This is like a dystopian sci-fi movie. So any tips for how to raise your kids in this kind of climate? Because I know we've got that, and then we've got the cultural Marxists on the other side. So how are you raising your children?
I'll tell you what, I homeschooled for a number of years. I've done all sorts of interesting things, but I homeschooled. And one thing I would say to anyone who's homeschooling, they don't have to be Christian, Catholic, religious at all. They could be Jewish or they could be secular. It doesn't matter. I would recommend anyone and everyone that's homeschooling to join Homeschooling Legal Defense Association. For that nominal fee to educate your child at home, that membership with HSLDA will offer you a level of protection like nothing else. They will defend you if you're in a situation where the social worker or supervisor comes from the school or from the government to your door. They will actually give you legal advice on how you're to handle that situation. And we do have, we call them, family services or children's aid. We do have government employees that can potentially come to your door and investigate. And they may be looking for abuse, they say, and I put that in quotes, and that abuse could be you're teaching your child something very different that they really disapprove of. And so it's very, very important to have a community of people where you have connection and protection under HSLDA membership. The other thing that I would recommend too is be very watchful and careful in who you're associating with. Be careful what you say publicly. You have to.
Definitely.
And we have, the other issue that we have is because we are just legal parents now in Canada under same-sex marriage, and we have only been legal parents for the last 10 years, the state does have the power to enter our homes if they feel there is a reason to do so. And we saw that happen with an Orthodox Jewish community who actually, the majority of them left Canada because of state interference, because they were not teaching curriculum to their students, to their children, that agreed with the state's curriculum.
I thought the Jews were very protected in Canada.
Well, this is it. They will go after the vulnerable small groups first. They will go after, individuals and families and groups that may not be as protected as other groups, in the sense they're not as assimilated within the community and don't have the network of supports around them. This is the challenge, is that if you see vulnerable groups having to leave the country, then you understand as parents that, how long will you have your freedom as a parent to be making the choices to teach your children certain values and beliefs and your faith in the privacy
That's
of
right.
your own home? How long will you have that freedom before someone knocks on your door? And if you're a careful parent, you have to always be prepared for that in Canada under our hate crime legislation and under same-sex marriage and with our human rights commissions and tribunal, that we are at risk. We're at a higher risk. And so we must be very careful before we open our front door.
And we have to remember that, what kind of future are we creating for our children if we don't fight this now? I mean, think of where your grandchildren could be living. I just had a couple more questions for you. What would you say to other adults who have grown up like you? They're learning to cope with their parents' choices and they don't know how to handle it.
Well, I would say face the reality of it. It's a lot harder to do than what I just said. It takes time. But if you truly want to be sane and, a decent person in the sense of being able to cope with stress in day-to-day life, you have to deal with the past. You have to sift through it and, love your parents, appreciate them, value the different men and women that were in your life growing up, whether you agreed with them or not, whether you liked them or not. Really just look at everyone as a valuable human being and love them. At the same time, recognize where there's losses, those permanent losses and deficiencies. And, recognize that our whole identity is not just wrapped up in our sexuality and gender. That is, you know, very, very important to our identity, but it's not all that we are. We're much bigger than that. And that any inclinations that we have, that doesn't have to become our identity. Also, forgive those people around you that have hurt you. It's really important to practice forgiveness on a daily basis. You know, I know that there are people that are Christians, Catholics, you know, that believe in forgiveness. But I would say, you know, whether you're religious or not, forgive. Really, I mean, so you don't have to carry that bitterness around with you. And the third thing I would say going forward is make the best choices possible going forward. Life is not perfect. Life has its challenges, but you can live day to day and enjoy the beauty around you and appreciate the people in your life. You can love more deeply and more intimately when you have faced the reality of the painful past, when you've forgiven those who've hurt you, and when you move forward in making the best choices possible.
I'd encourage everyone to buy your book too and help support your work, because you're doing important work. But I wanted to ask you, why is your message so critical now?
Well, you know, this is not really about ego. I was compelled to write when I got home in 2004 after testifying before Canada's Senate of Legal and Constitutional Affairs on hate crime legislation. I was compelled to write my book because I felt like, oh my goodness, they're going to make it a hate crime that I come out and say something that hurts the feelings of certain men and women and around me, or, you know, men or women that are like my father, who was involved with same-sex partners. And so I thought, you know, I got to write down my story. People have to understand that what it's like for a child to grow up in this. So I wrote Out From Under, the impact of homosexual parenting, and I publish it in the States because for a number of reasons, you know, the major reason, I wasn't sure if Canada would allow my book across the border. And we don't have the distribution network that the United States has. And our postal system charges probably double to triple what you charge in the States. And so, you know, I thought my book would be more accessible being published in America. And I also felt that with my story out there, that more adult children would come forward to share their stories, which is actually what's happened, and that legislators would take a step back and really consider, before they change laws around marriage, really consider the impact on children. And so that was really the purpose of my book, and I state that in my preface. My book is, it can be read in just a matter of a few days. But I would recommend people take coffee breaks, because there are difficult passages in the book, and especially if someone is an adult child, that this could hit home in a number of ways very personally. And I also recommend if people have issues, you know, they're still very stressed about it, if they have anxiety issues or any other risk factors, that they seek counseling and get the kind of support that they need and that would respect their faith values and their beliefs around sexuality and gender, marriage, and family.
Well, Dawn, please share your website details and also let people know how they can get your book and any upcoming speaking engagements you might have.
Well, I have a website I've had since 2006, and it is filled with news articles and research. It's a very simple website. It's not flashy. It's not one of those expensive websites. So when you go there, it's triple W, my first name and my last name. So it's www.dawn, D-A-W-N, and then my last name, which is S-T-E-F as in Frank, A-N as in Nicole, O-W-I, C as in Charles, Z. And if you can't remember my last name, just put in D-A-W-N and then Out From Under, and you'll be able to find my website. I've done a number of articles. I have done different media interviews. But as for speaking engagements, because of the political and legal risks with what I am doing publicly. I usually do not announce publicly where I'm next speaking.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But if you're associated with an event that is hosting me, they will tell you about me. I don't even send out emails to advise where I'm going next, what I'm doing. And the reason for that is because we have anti-spam legislation, and I'm not spamming anyone, but I could imagine that there'd be some people that would want to easily take me down with a $500,000 fine if I sent out an email and they said, you know, I really didn't sign up for this. I don't want this. And so I can't afford it. I don't even put in on Facebook or Twitter where I'm next speaking. And because it's extremely dangerous, there are risks when you're sharing publicly what I share publicly. And I'm only, you know, really, I'm speaking up for the child, for the children, and saying, you know, they need to be raised in the best environment possible. And that is, you know, a married father, mother household. And it doesn't mean that every household out there is going to be perfect. You know, every marriage has challenges. Every family has challenges. But we need to give children the best start we can in life, and we need to be real and not create, you know, fabricated ideas and try to brainwash children and say that every family structure out there, no matter how broken, it's going to be good for you. We have to be honest, because children do soon realize what they're missing. And they don't need to be permanently deprived of either a mother or a father who's biologically related to them. You know, children really, really need that connection going forward, that history, that ancestry, that heritage, not just biologically, but their heritage, their religious background, their ethnicity, and the different nationalities that are connected in their history. They need to know that. They need to know the culture they came from.
Absolutely.
It's very important to our whole identity. And, you know, there, of course, on the biology side, there's going to be mannerisms and certain you know, physical features that we have. All of that is so important.
Very good. Well, thank you, Dawn. I know you're busy, so we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lana. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity, and all the best to you. And thank you for your courage in addressing some of these very challenging topics today.
Well, it's no secret leftists are destroying personal freedom to choose how we raise our children, how we want to live our life, and who we want to associate with. What does the phony right have left to conserve? It's all being taken away by force, and still they worry about looking like fascists. Well, sadly, these people won't make it to the next level of evolution. These are serious times, folks. It's dire straits. We need to start becoming self-sufficient, less dependent on the system. How can we reorganize our lives to become more self-sufficient? Because it's a matter of time before you can't get access to what you need, especially if you're cut off for a hate crime. Who can you buy property with? What business can you start up? Where's our co-op? What food can you grow? Where's your brotherhood or your sisterhood you can call up when you need them? Where is our tribe? It's time to become tribal and think tribally in everything we do. Is it good for our people should be the question on our mind at all times. Is this ensuring the survival of our European children? The difference with Europeans is we think long-term. Can you see the long-term of where this is going? What are you doing now to leave your legacy for your future children? Pull out of public school. Can't afford it? Well, damn it, make some sacrifices. Sell that second car or go out to eat less. Connect with a homeschool network. Make it happen. The children are our future. We must raise them right and armor them with truths. Nature is on our side, and there's nothing more powerful than nature. I want to give a big thank you to our members who support us and make this possible. And if you want to help keep us going ad-free, please sign up for a Red Ice membership to access all our material or consider sending a donation. We do appreciate it. I'll be back next week with a show on women and parenting. Also, if you want to connect with me, I am on Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. On another note, we at Red Ice are always looking for good writers, journalists, editors, people with talent to help us create more content. This is not a hobby, it's a war. So can you write? What are your talents? Get in touch with us. Agents need not apply. All right, everyone, have a great night.
I climb the Redwood Hill, close on a rainy day. Mother Nature for a while. She told me of her love for the children in her trust and of her grave concern for the likes of you and me and us. Change for any man. I tried to comfort her, oh, but she would not be still. And how the rain did fall as I found my way back down the redwood hill. Cried on Redwood Hill.